The next thing you want to do is order this book, Iodine, What It Is and Why You Need It, second edition. I don't know if the first is even available at Amazon. Don't get the first. He's expanded this to new chapters. David Brownstein. You can get it at his website, should Amazon be out, drbrownstein.com. This book is really the best between two covers summary of all of those other articles. David has now worked with over 5,000 patients applying these principles, and so has the best clinical experience by far with all of this. All right, so this book would be the single best one thing to read. And if you're like me, some of you will have ordered it overnight tonight. I know how you are. You've already got the one-click selection ready to go. I do encourage you to do that. We loan this to patients. It was actually written for the general population, but good data for us too. So I will loan it to patients and let them order one if they want. All right? So that's just the source material. Now, quoting from one of those articles, everybody got that? Iodine, Why You Need It, Why You Can't Live Without It, second edition, Brownstein, and then Optimox.com. Read all of those articles. Oh, by the way, these articles do repeat because they were written for different publications, so sometimes half of it's new material and half is a rehash of other stuff because it was different sources. Okay, quoting now from one of those articles, which you'll get at the website. The essential trace element iodine is the only one required for and in the synthesis of hormones. These iodine-containing hormones are involved in, watch the list and think of the ramifications, embryogenesis, cell differentiation, lack of which we would call what? Rapid growth of undifferentiated cells would be what? Yeah, I didn't say that. Cancer. Cognitive development, growth, metabolism, and maintenance of body temperature. Iodine is highly concentrated in one organ, the thyroid gland, which visibly enlarges. Of course, then you earn an ICD-9 code. It is the mission of most Americans to collect as many ICD-9 codes as possible before death. I am codeless, or I am coded, therefore I am. It's sort of a modern Cartesian statement of being. The thyroid gland enlarges. We say you got a goiter, and others would say, no, marvelous adaptation to a poor situation. You ever notice your body doesn't care what you look like? Doesn't care what your collar size is or anything. It's going to do what it has to do. We call it a disease. It is not. It is an adaptation. Iodine, is the most deficient trace element in the world. With an acknowledged one-third of mankind functioning below optimal level, due to its deficiency. References below. Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism. I'm sure it's one of your favorites. Low intake of iodine is the world's leading cause of stupid. Yet as unbelievable as it may sound, this essential element has suffered from total neglect regarding the amount of it required by the body for optimal health. Pause there. What is the RDA for iodine? I wouldn't expect you to know, but it ranges from 120 to 145 micrograms, depending on who you read. And it varies a little bit with age, weight, and sex. So in general, think 150 micrograms for iodine. All right, that's the RDA. Now, what is the RDA, recommended daily allowance, based on? Yeah, you must be Bobo-less. Bobo removal. It is the minimum amount of iodine necessary to prevent the appearance of goiter. The minimum amount necessary to prevent the appearance of goiter. What in the world does that have to do with optimal health? Nothing. Perhaps nothing. And that's the point. Nobody has ever figured out what we really need. In 1930, Thompson et al. Wrote, "The normal daily requirement of the body for iodine has never been determined." This statement, says Abraham, is still true today, more than 70 years later. So as he began to look in older medical literature, he found, you know what? 100 years ago, thyroid didn't seem to be a big deal with physicians. They all did a very simple thing for any thyroid case. It was something you could get at the drugstore, and then they'd go on to something else. What was that simple thing that everybody used? That was Lugol's solution. The Lugol solution contains 5% iodine and 10% potassium iodide. It has been available since 1829, when it was introduced by the French physician. I have to do this right, French. Jean Lugol. Jean-Lugon. All right. And was used extensively in medical practice during the early part of the 20th century. The recommended intake for iodine supplementation at that time was 2 drops of Lugol's solution daily. That's what everybody did. And what that gave them was 12.5 milligrams, 100 times the current RDA. What was traditional was 100 times the RDA. Well, Abraham looked at that and said, "Hokey smokes, Batman. That's not what we were taught in school. In fact, if we were taught anything at all about this, we were taught that that level would do what to the thyroid? Would shut it down. There's no evidence. There never was any evidence that that's true. All of the data purported to affirm that high levels of iodine suppress come from iodine-based drugs. And what they did was place the blame on the iodine carrier portion, not the drug. Abraham talks about that in all of his writings that you'll have available if you go to those sources. Well, I was asked once about prolamine iodine, and we'll look at that. It was a pharmacist who knew about this, and he said, "Michael, does prolamine iodine contain both forms?" I had no idea that there were forms. I said, "Forms? Iodine has forms?" He said, "Yeah," and we talked about Lugol's solution, iodine and iodide. Well, it does. Royal Lee's original formula, 1953. This product by design contains 48% iodine, 52% iodide. It is actually a dry tablet form of Lugol's solution. But Lee was clever enough to not make that obvious. I called the company, spoke to She Who Makes All Things there, and I said, "Why is iodide?" She said, "That's what's there. It has never changed. This was Lee's formula." I said, "But the iodide..." She said, "It's potassium iodide, just like Lugol's solution. Why is it not on the label?" She said, "Don't know. It never was on the label. Doesn't have to be because that's not what it's sold as. I guess some things don't have to be on the label." I said, "Why did he not put it on the label?" She said, "Oh, I'm convinced he did it so that competitors could not duplicate what he had. He gave enough information, but not all of the information, because it was really a tablet form of Lugol's with the protein component bonded to a simple corn protein, zein. It's a simple protein. The pharmaceutical industry uses it as a coating for tablets. Nothing unusual there." All right. Well, this recommendation of 2 drops of Lugol's solution is as current as 1995 in Remington's Science and Practice of Pharmacy. Now, that book means nothing to us, but it shows that it was still there as a recommended daily regimen. As quoted by Gent, in 1928, a broad autopsy series found only 3% of women had fibrocystic disease of the breast. Now, this is how Abraham got started. He was looking at breast cancer and began to see a correlation with iodine intake, found this study. So in 1928, women in the main were doing, everybody was doing 2 drops of Lugol's solution. You bought it at the drugstore. Women had 3% fibrocystic disease of the breast, not cancerous, not necessarily precancerous, but you're headed that way. In 1973, that rate had risen to 89%. Now he postulates, could it be? Yes, there are lots of other factors, but could it be that we've been sold a bill of goods about the need for iodine and over the decades have starved ourselves so that we have no defense? New information coming up that'll blow you away after this part, another book you'll want to get. So he does postulate. He says, "I'm guessing, but it's worth considering." All right. Whenever I find a novel idea like this, as Mark had also mentioned this morning, here's our mistake. We as chiropractors go into a courtroom, and to defend ourselves, we're going to quote from a textbook. We do some weird thing, and we quote from a textbook. I'll show them. Here's my reference. And what is our greatest mistake? Who do we quote from? Oh, no. Huh? No. Oh, see, you guys aren't ready to go to jail, are you? Who do we quote from, and it's the wrong thing to do in a courtroom? From any chiropractic textbook. That is not life on the planet. I'm sorry. We like to think that what we write matters. In that community, it does not. So you quote from what? Standard medical references first. You build your case by starting with references that they use also. What are they going to do? Refute their own textbook? So I always like I always like to find something in standard textbooks. And in the nutrition field, this is pretty much the gold standard. It's mostly wrong, but nevertheless, it's one you'll want to get. Modern Nutrition and Health and Disease, 10th edition now by Shills is the primary author. Amazon has it, it's $130, huge. It's 2,000 pages. Modern Nutrition and Health and Disease. There's good stuff in there, lots and lots of authors and stuff that we wouldn't agree with, but it's a good resource. And if you can find something to validate your assertion there, it puts them really behind the eight ball. It's their book, and it is their gold standard. Well, here was the section on iodine from this textbook. It is rare for diets of natural foods to supply more than 2 milligrams or 2,000 micrograms of iodine per day. And most diets supply less than 1 milligram per day. People living in the northern coastal regions of Japan, whose diets contain large amounts of seaweed, have been found to have iodine intakes ranging from 50 to 80 milligrams of iodine per day. Now, of course, we would say, well, yes, but they're all hypothyroid, severe hypothyroid, it's been shut down. And the author would say, have you gone over there and taken a look at these people? These are the healthiest people I've ever seen in my life. Abraham found one group of women who have the lowest incidence of breast cancer on the planet. Who is that? It's these women. There's another group of men who have, if not the lowest, a yet remarkably low incidence of prostate cancer. Who's that? Mr. Seaweed. So he looked at this and realized, I forget what we were taught in school, it's not true. These people munch on seaweed like we would eat candy. They eat pounds of it daily. We you know, our little bowl of mung bean sprouts isn't going to cut it, and a little sliver of seaweed won't do it, and a few kelp tablets is nowhere near enough. They're getting 50 to 80 milligrams. As he dug further, he said, amongst the older Japanese, not the young ones, they eat and die just like Americans, but amongst the older traditional Japanese, their average intake of iodine is about 13 milligrams per day. That's what they have always done. So he began to wonder, is that what's really normal? Because these people have always done that, and they seem to have a real handle on at least these types of cancer. So he began to experiment. He did other research. He thought about Lugol's solution. Why is it that Lugol's solution delivered essentially that? How did Lugol know that? Nobody knows. Good guess, lucky, inspired, crazy, but it was exactly, apparently, the right thing. So at the end of all of this, Abraham has concluded that the real daily need is about 12, 13 milligrams per day of the two forms of iodine. Now, they're used differently. The thyroid gland itself uses iodine primarily. There are throughout your body peripheral halogen receptor sites, notably breast and prostate tissue, but the lymph system is looking for iodine for reasons you'll see in just a minute. The lymph system needs about 6 milligrams of iodide, the -1 reduced form. There's the 12 milligrams. 6 for the thyroid itself, iodine. 6 for the peripheral system, iodide. So even the patient who has no thyroid still needs, if this is right, what? About 6 milligrams per day. And they're probably getting nothing, thinking that's okay because they have no thyroid. They're dying on the vine. All right? So 12 milligrams per day of the two forms in just about equal amounts. That's what Lee did in proline iodine, and that's what Lugol did in his solution. And that apparently, if Abraham is right, is what we used to eat. Now, he began to work with his patients, and he would give them 2 drops of Lugol's solution. He didn't experiment with something new. He said this was used for over 100 years. So let's just go back to what physicians used to do, and patients began to respond remarkably well. But if they stopped, they'd go downhill again. That's what led him to discover the peripheral need and the fact that we have to do this long enough to fill up the system. There's like a storage of iodine that we need to have to sustain. And if what we do each day is just the daily need, then tomorrow if I don't do it, I'm deficient again unless I build up a backlog. So he began to experiment and he would do 15 milligrams and then 18. He found that 18 milligrams per day, it took a year and a half to 2 years to fill up that system. When a new patient comes in and they're symptomatic, how much time do we have to help them before they're gone? 30 minutes. You get a half hour? How many visits do you get where they're without perceived benefit, the patient sticks with you? How many visits? You get four? I don't. I get three. The first visit, getting the second visit's easy. All right, they're there for one, they'll come for the second. But I'll tell you, the third visit, if something isn't happening, they're wondering, and wisely so, how long do you go to somebody if you don't perceive any change? Now, if you can educate them, if they can get the message and understand, that's different. And those patients are out there, but that's not the majority. They didn't come to get edumacated. They just came to get fixed. I've yet to have a patient coming in for health. Have you had a patient coming in for health? I've never seen such a creature. They exist in chiropractic movies and in pamphlets, but patients are coming in for what? They want to get fixed. It's our job to reposition their minds, and we can do that over time. So by the time Abraham was done, he found that for the average adult, this information has nothing to do with kids. They haven't looked at kids yet. Takes 50 milligrams. That's only what many Japanese people eat. 50 milligrams per day for about 90 days to restock the pantry. And then you can drop back down to that roughly 12 milligram daily need. That's Abraham's work. Read all of his stuff to find out how and why he got that number. All right? Now, how are you going to determine this with the patient? Well, frankly, it's easy. And I'll tell you, actually, with BioMeridian, how I find it, it's pretty obvious and easy. But sometimes just with the case history. They're just telling you they're a thyroid case. And I'll tell you what Lee said about iodine when we look at prolamine in just a minute. Now, how am I going to determine clinically that I'm done? Well, Abraham developed a urine loading test, and here's how it works. The place to get it is in the back of Brownstein's book. It's a lab in North Carolina. I didn't put it up here, but in the back of Brownstein's book is where to get it. I don't even remember the lab's name. It's about $80 your cost. What the patient does is this. They do the 50 milligram loading dose of iodine iodide, and they do a 24-hour urine catch. What Abraham found is that if that body is fully saturated with iodine, it will dump 95% or more of the iodine right out in the urine. In fact, all it does is fail to pick it up. It only picks it up if it needs it. Letting it go is easy. So if the body doesn't need the iodine, it frankly just does nothing, doesn't pick it up. And so the loading test is looking for ultimately passing 45 of the 50 milligrams right back out in the urine. New patients on average are 10 to 30%. They're like iodine sponges. These people walk by the ocean and the tide shifts. Fish start screaming. Coral starts snapping off. I don't even bother to do it anymore. Everybody fails. And it's expensive. You know, you add your profit on there if you're going to do that or whatever. And it's not necessary. I don't need that to affirm anything. And I'm not trying to write papers on this. Clinicians who are writing about this have to have detailed scientific backup. I don't need it to work with my patients. Don't care about it. So what can we do in office? You do the temperature test, Barnes basal temperature test, axillary temperature first thing in the morning should be 97.8 to 98.2. Very accurate. What else can we do? The iodine patch test. Where did that come from? Huh? Nope, not Broda Barnes. There's no scientific basis at all for the iodine patch test. It is totally invalid. Doesn't mean I don't do it, but it has no basis. Never, ever discuss in a scientific setting the patch test. You will be laughed out of the room. Trust me. There's no basis for it. It is purely anecdotal. So let's talk about what we think it means. We can talk about it and we'll do it. I'm going to do the iodine patch test. Understand at the drugstore there are two tinctures of iodine, a 2% and a 7%. Use the 2%. The 7% can be irritating to the skin of many patients. 2%. I'm going to do a patch about the size of a silver dollar on some skin where it's easily seen and readily absorbed. I recommend the inner upper arm somewhere in here. Some people want to put it on their forehead. They want it obvious. They're doing something special. All right. So you put it on and paint it as dark as you can and nice and even. There's an underlying assumption behind this test. What is the assumption about even doing it? That what's going to happen? That the body's going to absorb the iodine through the skin based on need. There's no evidence for that at all. No studies have affirmed that. We don't have a problem accepting that because we see it disappear. And it's not wearing off. The body is absorbing it. And here's what we do see. The rate of absorption and the time it takes to absorb it changes over time. So with that, we make some assumptions that I think are valid for our office, but not for writing papers. All right. How long then is the iodine supposed to last? You'll never see anybody last, I've never seen anybody last 24 hours. I don't know where that number came from. Down through the misty dawn of time, the gods of the Norse, you know, floated over here. They floated up from Lemuria and Mu and left it on a shore. It lasts as long as it lasts. That's how long it lasts. All that matters for a patient is that it gets longer, which implies they're absorbing less. A number from one patient means nothing compared to another. So the first time I did it, mine was about 10 hours. And I thought, because I thought 24 hours was the goal, I thought, man, I'm near death. It's still around 10 hours, and trust me, I'm fully saturated. So for me, that's probably it. The average new patient, it lasts less than 2 hours. I've put it on patients in the room, and before they leave, it's almost gone. Yeah, they're that bad. But then the next visit, it's lasting 3 hours or 4 hours. So all I care about is that it appears to be lasting longer, and they're doing it right. That tells me that this appears to be working. Scientifically valid? Nope, not at all. Anecdotally valid? Good enough for me and for you. 24 hours? I don't know. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter what the time is for that patient. So I do it, and I get the Barnes basal temperature test to confirm. All right. So I learned about this, and I began, as I always do, to experiment on who first?
Yourself.
Me. All righty. So what am I going to use to do this? How am I going to load this in? Prolamine iodine. That's 3 milligrams of the combined forms. Now, bear in mind, that is not on the label. The iodide portion is not there, and it's not going to be there. But it is both forms. So really, this is kind of a dilute form of Lugol's solution, the thought being that the chelated form, the prolamine chelated form, will be absorbed better. We don't know now if that's really true. And Dr. Lee said that was speculation. He didn't know for sure. Guy Abraham is actually watching a clinical trial on this to determine whether he thinks the prolamine form is actually more efficient. And if so, he said he will surely promote it. He just does not think it is. So we're waiting to see. At any rate, if I need to do a 50 milligram load, how many tablets is that? 17 tablets. Yeah, well, I ain't doing that. Ain't doing it. Ain't doing it. So let me tell you what I do. Some choose not to do this. I choose not to be a purist at this point. All right? On that website, you'll see the product that Abraham had developed because he had the same problem, patient compliance. What does the Lugol solution taste like? You better really like iodine, a whole lot. And so he had a dry tablet form compounded for him. It's just Lugol solution in a tablet, and he calls the product Iodoral. And that's what you'll see sold at Optimoc's website, Iodoral. I do use that for the loading phase only, simply because it's easier and cheaper for the patient. They can do 4 tablets a day, not 17. However, you have to be cautious even with that. I'll explain. So you've got options. You can do 17 prolamine iodine. That's fine, but you may find I can't also have them do 6 Catalan, 6 Cardio Plus, and you see the problem? We got a lot of things we want them to do, and oh yes, and 17 of these. And the patient just passes out right, you know, in your office. So in the loading phase, I prefer to do something that's easier for the patient. Now, most patients can handle this right away, but many sensitive patients, or if you have a patient who is hyper-responsive or hyper-reactive to everything, you can't jump in and just do this. So it is always wise with a patient that you don't know. Look, how many of you have patients that you know so well, you already know whether you could or could do this, you could start tomorrow. We got patients that we know. But a new patient, I don't know. I have no idea how they're going to respond. So I like to test them this way. I'm going to use prolamine iodine and titer the dose up. So I'll tell them what we're going to do with iodine. But I'll start them with 1 prolamine iodine per day. That's 3 milligrams. Anybody can do 3 milligrams. I've never seen anybody who couldn't do 3. All right? I'll have them do 1 a day for a week. Then they'll raise it to 2 a day for a week. What's the rush? They've been a mess for years. There's no rush here. And then I'll take them to 3 a day for a week, and then 4 a day for a week. So it's going to take a month to get to 4 per day. In my experience, once they can go up to and handle 4 a day, I can go to 50 milligrams. If they're going to have a cleansing reaction, this is not an allergic response. If they're going to have a detox reaction, it, in my experience, has always happened at or before 12 milligrams. If they can handle 12, I can do whatever I want to do. Might be wrong on the occasional case, but I haven't seen any yet. And at that point, if I work them up to 4, then I'll ask them, hey, we can do 17 of these, or I can switch products for a little while, for a couple of months to make it easier. And I don't care which way they want to go, all right? Then, once I'm done, we go back down to 3 or 4 prolamine iodine daily. Usually it's 4, 2 in the morning, 2 at night. All right, these were the things that Lee found it helped with back in the 50s, menopausal hot flashes. If you help a woman with hot flashes, do you have a friend for life?
Yes.
She'll want to have your baby. All righty. Now, does it always work? No, but I'll tell you, it's been amazing. When I got back to the office, having learned about this, as a result of a weekend seminar, a discussion with a pharmacist, I immediately selected my 10 most difficult menopausal cases, and I just gave them product. I said, look, I want to try something new. We've done well with you, but we're kind of stuck. I believe there's more, and I'm just going to give you something I want you to take. I'm not going to charge you for it because I don't know if this is really going to help. It won't hurt you, but I don't know if it's going to help you. Are you willing to experiment? What do patients always say?
Yes.
Not yes. Hell yes. All right. So I had them all begin. 8 out of 10 said it was like turning on a light switch. That was their language to me. And they all said that or something similar, sometimes exactly the same words. It's like you turned on a light switch and my system has begun to work. All right? Basal temperature began to rise. Mood changed, and all kinds of other subjectives. Thyroid dysfunction, thick mucus, diminished secretions, uterine fibroids. Now, a little new information I'll give you in a minute. You'll see how and why that could be true. But fibroid is uncontrolled growth. Fibroid is, to a very mild degree, a kind of cancer, if you consider cancer as just any unregulated or partially unregulated growth. And so this link between iodine and cancer goes way, way back in this century. Tremors. This is the patient who has a central tremor. Thyroid panel's okay. Nobody can find a reason for this tremor, and they're young. That's what we're dealing with here. All right. Okay? Yeah. Yeah, dry mouth, but you have to rule out Sjogren's syndrome, parotid diseases, things of that nature. Donna, we were at dinner last night, and she said, be sure and mention this vestigial embryologic connection between thyroid and what gland? Parotid. They come from the same branchial arch. Many early practitioners, in order to stimulate a thyroid, would actually work on parotid. So I'm not sure what to do with this, and you won't find any modern work on this. But remember, there's a link between thyroid and parotid. And so there is a place to try or to test for 1 to 3 or so parotid PMG for a thyroid case. Especially if you're doing everything else and it's just not activating, it may well be held back by a thyroid, by the parotid, yes. No, I hit them heavy. The question is with the women, since I didn't like any of the 10, I just hit them with the heavy dose. Yeah, we did 10,000 milligrams of iodine a day. No, I started them at 50 milligrams per day. I told them what we were going to do. And I said, now, if you get a headache or any adverse signs, we'll back off. No harm is done. We'll just clear out. So I started them at the full loading dose because I told them I need to see as quickly as possible if this is going to help you. And it did.
Okay. If you have somebody that has perceived allergy to you, iodine.
Yeah. Okay, perceived first. It is not possible for a living body to be allergic to iodine. A body that is allergic to iodine is called a cadaver. Every cell needs iodine, but you may have a body that is hypersensitive to protein associated with iodine. Iodine is always bound to something else, and their sensitivity is to the carrier molecule. And what is the most frequent such hypersensitivity? Ocean-based protein. So kelp doesn't work for them. Fish, shellfish doesn't work for them, not because of the iodine. You see, that's the mistake, thinking it's the iodine. That's not possible. But they are hyperreactive, and there's another confounding factor. As Abraham began to do this work, he would have patients who appeared to have an allergic reaction to this, and he also said, now that can't be what's really happening. I know that's the way it appears, and that is the way it is subjectively perceived by the patient, but it can't be real. What's going on? Your analysis showed that as they began to do the iodine loading, something else was happening, and this is how they discovered it. Remember, there are peripheral halogen receptor sites throughout the body looking for what? Iodine. But iodine isn't there anymore. We're at sub-minimal doses. We don't have it. Those halogen receptor sites will not remain open. Something will fill them. What are they filled with? Chloride, fluoride, and primarily bromine. Why bromine? Because in the early 1960s, someone on high declared that we're getting too much iodine. Up to that point, iodine was used in white flour as a stabilizer or whatever it did chemically. It was removed by divine fiat and replaced with bromide, a known toxin. So most of the white bread crunching Americans walk around with bodies filled with bromine, which begins to dump because the body's halogen receptor sites preferentially want iodine. When there's enough there in the iodide form, they will dump out whatever they're holding and take the iodine. What iodine causes in many patients is massive detox like you've never seen. But more than that gets dumped, the body starts dumping other things like mercury and all kinds of other crap that it was not able to get rid of because of thyroid suppression. Isn't that amazing? They saw this stuff coming out and said, what is this? And then they realize the body's hanging on to it because it doesn't have its normal detox mechanism. It doesn't know what to do with it. All right? So when I have such a patient, I will start slowly. If my assumption is right, that it is in fact then the ocean-based proteins, should there be a reaction to prolamine iodine? It's zein, that's a corn protein, and potassium iodide. Shouldn't be a problem, all right? But if I thought so, I could back off. So let's go through all of the ways that Royal Lee provided iodine. This will tell you how important he knew it was. He gave five ways to deliver it. At the lowest level, one cataplex F tablet, not the pearls, no iodine in the pearls. One cataplex F tablet delivers 60% of the RDA for iodine. Anybody can handle 60% of the already miserably low RDA for iodine. So I could start with one tablet of cataplex F and see if they handle it. All right? Moving up, I can go to one trace minerals B12, that's kelp and alfalfa. Now this might be problematic. Each tablet gives 100% of the RDA for iodine, but I could try it and see. Because if there's no reaction there, then it's just a question of how much they can handle before we trigger detox. Next level up, iodomir, strongest GIGOS, 130%. But again, ocean-based may be problematic or perceived as problematic. Again, you might just be stirring up detox. You say potato, they say potato. You say tomato, they say tomato. You say healing crisis, they say allergy. Next level up, organically bound minerals. 167.67% of the RDA for iodine. And then the big daddy, prolamine iodine. Now, when you look in the original Vitamin News, and speaking of which, several things you have to look at, but there's a new from the foundation, a new marvelous version of the Vitamin News. If you don't have this, it's like a must-have, right, Mark? For the first time, this is indexed. Could that be useful? How many times have you been saying, I know Mark's done it, I have, damn, man, it's in here somewhere, let's see, and you're flipping through. Well, let me try flipping this way. Well, trust me, it's in here. So they spent a lot of time indexing it. It was a project Mark had worked on, and they finally got it done. So a marvelous new publication. Vitamin News. Vitamin News. You have it, but it's a better indexed publication. If you look in Vitamin News and in the product bulletin, it's interesting that Dr. Lee's recommendation for patients who need prolamine iodine, he said in general they'll need what? How many a day? Anybody remember? Three. In fact, what he said was three or more. What was he recommending? Lugol's solution. It's what he had created, was a dry tablet form, modified a little bit of Lugol's solution. Lee was already well aware of Lee's work, of Lugol's work. Well, Dr. Lee was aware of everybody's work. That's the advantage he had. So he was trying to do it without letting people know what he was doing. How insane was it in 1953 to put out a tablet that had 2,000% of the RDA for iodine? Was he crazy? I think, one day I'll ask him, I think that's why he did a 3 milligram tablet. Why not just do Lugol's level? I think politically he thought, I just can't. But if I stay below that, maybe I'm safe. I don't know for sure, but there you are. All right. So he said people who need it probably need three or four per day or something like that. His bottom line recommendation with prolamine iodine was try it and see. He said with any given patient, try it and see. If it doesn't help, stop. The worst that can happen is signs of iodism temporarily, runny nose, thinned fluids, like you have a cold but you do not. Could be diarrhea, increased peristalsis. Could be suboccipital headache. And then it's just too much for that body and stop. Well, when I was doing the 50 milligrams a day, that's what happened to me at 61 days. I was feeling fine. But I always tell people will, you know how it is, try this doc or try that, or a new product comes out, even if it's SP or MediHerb or whatever, and they'll say, oh, try this. And I said, what am I supposed to feel? I feel good all the time. I am not a good test case. I don't want to feel better. That would be illegal. It's true, I feel good all the time. Don't get enough sleep, but short of that, I'm not looking to feel better. So I'm not a good test case, so I'm taking the 50 milligrams. I'm out at 61 days. At 61 days, I woke up and had a headache that felt like someone had driven a stake through my head. And I instantly realized, it is time. That's the iodine. I stopped, and 24 hours later, it was gone. That was my limit. All right, let me move on before we break. Now, as I was researching this, I just was searching, and I found this book, Breast Cancer and Iodine. I ordered it just for the title. I thought, oh, cool. I was blown away when I got it, by Dr. David Derry. Startling, groundbreaking new research shows how to prevent and how to survive breast cancer. There's one printing. He's retired. I think he wanted to get this out before he dies. It is filled with grammatical and typographical errors. Mark, I don't think he had an editor. It's almost like he wanted to get this out there and be done with it. I got it. It sat on my desk for a day, and then I had a chance to pick it up and was blown away with what he was saying. It was like ditto to everything we're talking about. He makes no mention of Abraham, Guy Abraham, or Royal Lee, or anybody, or even Lugol, but totally, apparently, independently, has reached a similar conclusion. Now, let me show you his summary. It's only about 100 pages. Get it and read it. I don't know how long Amazon will have it, so make sure that you get Breast Cancer and Iodine, David Derry, D-E-R-R-Y, because I don't know if they'll republish. They may not. Here was his conclusion, well-referenced, so you can look up the primary sources for the effects of iodine in the body. Some are obvious, some are not. First, iodine is necessary, as we know, to make triiodothyronine and thyroxine. That's a given. It's about what we learned in school. Next, it is the main body surveillance mechanism for abnormal cells. I read that and I said, say what? So I flipped open Guidance. Current edition. There's no discussion of the two levels of body surveillance. This is an idea that's extra Guytonian. It's from somewhere else. References are there. He said the body has a scouting system that is always, and it's not the immune system. The immune system is part of it, but that's a secondary defense mechanism. He said there is a system looking for abnormal cells, and what it does is trigger apoptosis. Both in normal cells that are at their normal lifespan. They're supposed to die, but there is a system that finds abnormal cells and tells them, you don't belong here, die, and triggers the normal apoptotic mechanism. That system depends on iodine to work. If he's right, and everybody now is down to RDA levels of iodine, what would we have expected to see rise over the years? Cancer. Well, hello, America. That's where we are. Just amazing. Well referenced in his work. Iodine directly detoxifies many chemicals. He said a great deal of chemical poisoning could be circumvented if people had adequate iodine. The body has mechanisms to handle many external toxins. It reacts with tyrosine and histidine to inactivate enzymes and denature proteins. That's why it's antiseptic to bacteria, fungi, viri, and protozoans. I remember in school, we were learning about tincture of iodine antiseptic. I remember asking in class, well, how's it do that? The answer, the only answer I ever got was, well, it kills bacteria. But that was my question. Why does it kill bacteria? Oh, it's antiseptic. But that's my question. You be quiet now. That was what I remember, being shut up. I said, I just want to know how it works. Well, it works well. All right? Well, here's how and why it works. On these single microorganisms, they have histidine and tyrosine in their cell membrane. And the histidine and tyrosine structure sticks out like this. Iodine, apparently, like it's scouting, but this is all automatic. Iodine, when these guys are out there, iodine latches on automatically as soon as it perceives histidine and tyrosine. It changes the conformation of that protein structure. Iodine gloms on here, twists them inside the cell, inactivates certain enzyme pathways, and destroys the cell. It's like an off-on switch right outside the cell. Iodine turns them off and says, you're dead. The cell has no defense. Isn't that amazing? All right? And if we have sufficient iodine in the system, Derry insists that works all the time. And many of the things that grow in our bodies work because the natural killer mechanism isn't there. We then have to depend on the immune system to do it directly. And the immune system says, dude, where you been? How come the rest of the team isn't here? I'm not supposed to have to deal with all of this. I'm actually here to do cleanup. It takes me a while to ramp up to do this directly, and I may not be able to. My first string wasn't there. They weren't on the field. Interesting. Detoxifies biological toxins, food poisoning, snake venoms, etc. Anti-allergic, watch this, makes external proteins non-allergic. He insists if there's sufficient iodine in the system, iodine will glom onto the external proteins, neutralize them, and allow for transport to kidney and liver for removal, and it does not engage an immune response because it's already inactivated. If the immune system has to do it, you get the full-blown allergy response because that isn't what should be happening. Next, anti-autoimmune mechanism by making spilled intracellular proteins non-allergic. Well, now we're actually stepping deep into protomorphology. All right, and I'm sure Dr. Lee was well aware of this because he always talked about the importance of iodine to regulate and prevent cancer. But when the intracellular components are spilled out, that should not necessitate a full-blown immune response if Derry's correct. Sufficient iodine is there to inactivate them, to tell the body, got it, they're tagged, can't do any harm, unregulated growth factors are not there, we've got it handled, immune system, you can remain quiescent. But if that system isn't there, that main surveillance system, then we trigger all of the autoimmune diseases. When did they begin to rise dramatically in this country? About the same time that iodine began to go, if you track the history, just an interesting correlation. Protects double bonds in lipids for delivery to the cardiovascular system and synaptic membranes in the brain and retina. Derry says if this is right, then it's much more important than just eating omega-3s. The omega-3s are already oxidized before they get to the site of need when there's insufficient iodine. He insists iodine protects and preserves the double bond so that the good omega-3s we do get our patients to eat can get delivered where they need to go. You may have a case that appears to be getting lots of omega-3s, whether it's tuna oil or whatever they're doing, and they're getting some response, but not enough. He said it might be lack of iodine. It's not getting where it needs to go. Number, whatever it is. Fetal source of apoptotic mechanism during, drewing is an interesting word. It's a scientific term that exceeds spell checkers. Drewing, that's drewing, not during, but drewing. Drewing development in utero and breastfed babies. Here he's alluding to the rise of fetal cancers. Why is that young body not able to control growth? Well, perhaps it's because that young body has no iodine. Why? Because mother didn't have iodine, so baby cannot. Protects from apoptotic diseases such as leukemia, possible initial source of thyroxin early in fetal development. Now, this is fascinating. In one of, I don't remember where it is. Mark, I can never find this. There was a discussion Dr. Lee had about iodine and Down's syndrome. And he, early on, it's one of those things I can never find again, but he said early on, it is quite possible that even though the genetic defect, trisomy 21, is there, it does not have to manifest, but will if the mother is subclinically hypothyroid, because the body cannot defend against it. Now, to understand what he was talking about, and actually what Dr. Lee postulated, I think went beyond what he knew at the time. He was right, but didn't know how right he was. Go to this website, www.brucelipton.com. How many know Bruce Lipton's work already? Yeah, some of you. BruceLipton.com, Lipton likes the tea. Lipton is a epigeneticist. Epigenetics now has revealed that the gene is just a stupid floating library. It's not really in control of anything. It isn't. It is a huge floating library. There are good volumes on the shelf. There are bad volumes on the shelf. The master control is the thing that determines what book you're going to pull off the shelf. It's all there, good, bad, and ugly. The fact that there is an aberrant gene does not itself mandate that that gene expresses. Look in the current edition of Guidance. The whole genome is coated with histone, a protein layer. Nothing is expressed until something else rolls back the histone layer, allowing a volume, if you will, to be pulled out. What does that? It is the cell membrane. The brain of the cell is the cell membrane, which means everything affects everything and anything can fix anything. That's epigenetics. You should go to his website and check that out. Well, what Dr. Lee was touching on then and didn't even know it is if that thyroid is hypoactive, all of this normal protective mechanism and perhaps the ability to properly select in utero what's going to be expressed is diminished. And so the bad volume gets selected. Lee alluded to the possibility that massive iodine or thyroid support for the child right after birth might help much, much repair. That the Downs baby might be able to correct at least a large part of that, improve IQ a little bit or something. You know, he tossed it out as a what if, and nobody knew what to do with it. Well, Derry's work makes me think of that once again. And I tell you what, if you're a pregnant woman in my office, you're going to be smelling like iodine. We're going to certainly investigate that. All right. Well, if you read Brownstein's book, Derry's book, the other articles, you're going to become an iodomaniac. I caution you against doing that. Many in the room are already doing this, and I hear from all over the country incredible results. Cases that were doing 80% better, but now closer to 100. Start with yourself, your family, patients that you know very well. We do not know what to do with kids. Maybe it's a bi-weight dosing. Don't know that, so I'm not recommending this for kids. I know what my own kids are taking, but then I can abuse them. It is my legal right. Just like I've always done. All right, any questions on this before we break? Yes?
I had a couple of patients who were not responding and removed the iodine for some time and then did the iodine test, discovering that they were 90% full body. And understood then from Abraham that it was the importer system that was in error. So at this time, I do test everybody because of those two instances where they could not uptake any iodine.
Yeah, and those cases are there. I just don't see that many. So you're certainly correct that there are those who can't, and then there are other defects that we would have to work on. But that's not going to be most who come in. So it certainly is not unwise to do that for all of them. And of course, if they need iodine, then they need all of the other trace minerals. They need so much else, but it's this one thing that has unlocked so many of these cases.
With the Down syndrome baby, I know that there could be a gene that could express this type of fetal condition, but I also know that sometimes there is not a gene that expresses along the genetic parent protocol. So would it help equally?
I think the question is, even if there's not the genetic defect, yes, I would want to do this kind of support for any of them. If it doesn't work, no harm is done. But if it does, what if what I get is two extra IQ points? That can be a life-changing difference. So the parents and the child would want anything that we could do, and no harm will be done even if it doesn't work. There was yes?
What about the complete thyroidectomy?
Complete thyroidectomy, they still need, for the peripheral halogen receptor sites, about 6 milligrams per day. So the fact is, they don't need none. They need less, certainly, but they still need some for the general defense system. See, a lot of this that's happening has nothing directly to do with thyroid. That's the part that I didn't know, that Derry pointed out so nicely in his writing. Okay, a couple more and then we'll break. Yes? Yeah, and in the back of Brownstein's book, he's asked, and he answers it very cautiously about Hashimoto's thyroiditis. He's convinced the reason for that is iodine insufficiency. And so basically he says when you read between the lines, he does exactly the same thing. Now here's the tremendous advantage we have over Abraham and Brownstein. They don't know where Wisconsin is. And when you mention Wisconsin, they think beer and cheese. They don't know anything about using thytrophin, the thyroid protomorphogen. We have an incredibly much more powerful tool chest, and we're trying to make them aware of that. They're open to the concept, but they said, we don't even know what you're talking about. Yeah, we know. All right, so they're monitoring a study now, and we're talking about adding things like vitamin F and thytrophin and other things. So that would be part of a protocol for that patient. Still would do the iodine loading to feed that, because what modern medicine does is feed a nutritional deficiency with a synthetic hormone. That's like whipping a tired horse. I can make it work, but it's going to die early. So we have much more powerful tools, but the approach will be basically the same.